Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are featuring conversations with doctors, psychologists, people that are in the field, and discussing the issues that we care about. One issue that we talk about a lot here on Let's Go There, and even on Channel Q, is toxic masculinity.
Oh, honey, I hear the straight men screaming.
Right? So today we've got Dr. Milo Dodson joining us, who is a psychologist, to talk more about this. Welcome back to the show.
Man, thank you so much for having me. And full transparency, thank you for sharing that comment about the straight men screaming, because I think as a cis straight man, I think a lot of the conversations I have are based in heterosexism and homophobia. Mm-hmm. And I think I really, really take ownership of my privilege and being able to recognize that when I have conversations, mm-hmm. and just really encouraging more of those conversations.
No, and I think that's beautiful, because one, I could kind of consider you a unicorn, because just so awesome and so accepting, and look, the way I see you, and you know, obvious disclosure, our sister station, Amp Radio, you're
her partner.
And I think it's one of those things where we here on Channel Q, we're all about giving everyone a voice, but I think talking about toxic masculinity, especially directed towards cis hetero people and men, it can be uncomfortable. And I think it's something that we have to kind of take that blanket away and just like, let's have a real conversation here.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times the uncomfort or the discomfort is grounded in a fear or an anxiety. I can share, for me as a kid, I was always told, don't cry, oh, that's gay. And so there's this, somehow there's this equating expression and your sexuality, and to somehow say, like, if you're crying, then you're less than, and then so if you're not straight, then you're less than, and so somehow those become equal. And, you know, clearly as like an 11, 12-year-old, I didn't have the language. But when I went to undergrad and went to grad school, it was like, oh, that's what it was. That's why I felt like this wasn't really sitting with my spirit.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And now toxic masculinity is something that a lot of people say. Do you feel like it's just a buzz term? And how do you get through that? You know, when people bring it up on the other side, like, oh, here it goes again. You're bringing this up.
Yeah, I think people have that type of reaction when they don't really understand what it is and what it isn't. So masculinity in itself can be helpful in terms of giving folks resilience, giving folks tenacity and perseverance to push through. And at the same time, toxic masculinity comes into the picture when we really suppress emotion, when there's the expectation that I can't express myself because somehow I'm less than, or I'm going to be weak. And as a man, again, the toxic masculinity part, I have to win at all costs. And so if I start to express myself, then somehow I'm losing. And to feel is failure for a lot of folks.
Wow. I mean, that's actually super powerful. That
feel is failure.
Yeah, that you said that. Because, okay, so this conversation, one, is obviously is a huge conversation happening in culture. But specifically for us, there was an article on Playboy.com that the headline read, "Why She Can't Just Say No or the Danger of Male Rejection."
Yes.
And not only I feel like that does that belong to cis hetero women, but that also belongs to trans women as well, because a lot of times trans women are at they fear for their lives, or they do die due to cis hetero men feeling closeted or don't wanting to, they feel gay or whatever emotions are navigating through. And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about that, because I think, one, what is the conversation of like Me Too and all these things where I feel like now we've lost, people say we lost affection, where it's like we can't be too affectionate. What is what's the line between being healthy and being toxic?
Well, from the jump, let's say this: consent is sexy. And so if you're confused, for a lot of people, that's probably because you haven't really asked. So consent is an affirmative type thing where you actually have to gain consent and not just assume that a person's giving you consent.
Yeah, it needs to be clear. It's not just body language. Well, you mean body language.
Well, but that's a thing, because that happened to Aziz Ansari, where there was like a nonverbal body language where the girl was like, I did not want this, but she never left his apartment. And it, she kind of continued to go on with it. And he was like, well, I thought everything was fine. Right. And I feel like a lot of times that is the case in some of these moments where there is the quote unquote good guy, where they're also trying to navigate this era of like, well, am I making a mistake? Do I try? Yeah.
And to be clear, I know that as a straight cis man, I'm in a system of privilege, and so I benefit from that type of system and different discussions that I can opt out of at times. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about Aziz or folks who are considered to be the good guys, one, knowing that you're in a system of oppression at times, and then two, to say, well, I thought she was okay with it, is kind of showing there was a gap there. And so instead of thinking that she would be okay with it, being able to be really intentional and asking. And so that's why I'm talking about consent being affirmative and something that you earn instead of just get assumed that way.
And yeah, what is it about, I guess, the dynamic? And I know we talk about, obviously, gender fluidity, but this is a very sometimes male-female discussion. And why is this an important thing to talk about right now? And how does it affect mental health?
Oh, I mean, it's everything. To be clear, again, gender fluidity, we know gender is not binary. It's not just men or women. And being able to...
Gender is a concept.
Yes, and a construct, exactly. Yeah. And so as we're talking about mental health, knowing that for some folks, there's the equating of, if I'm going to express myself with one gender or in one way, or maybe changing gender at times, also knowing that I'm not going to feel safe in some spaces. And so the intersection of race and gender, like you were talking about, trans-identified women, particularly trans-identified women of color, and how there's so many spaces that aren't safe, like straight up. And so being able to myself use that privilege to speak to instances of oppression and transphobia, and really have those difficult conversations, like we were talking
about. Well, how do you, I guess, how do you lead that conversation without, you know, because it is such a touchy moment, and you have to be real about human emotions. We're all human. We're all going to feel uncomfortable.
That's right.
Whether it's race, whether it's this, it's all these things.
Yeah.
How do you have that conversation and lead in a way of coming from empathy and understanding, like, okay, I'm not going to, like, you know, I'm not going to just let you do anything, but I am going to hold you accountable because of your privilege.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for me, I go to the research on this, and there's a concept called cultural humility. So when you're having conversations with folks, it's about being able to say, look, this is who I am based off of my expressed and my cultural backgrounds, my identities. Let me first seek to understand that way. Let me actually really listen. And so when we're having difficult dialogues, it's more about listening and showing empathy and validating someone's concerns.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to say, well, this is what I think it is, and this is what I think it isn't, and you ain't this and you ain't that. And that's not helpful.
Or like, and I'm not going to name people, but I know some people that they'll be like, oh yeah, you're just saying what everyone's saying, putting a blanket statement on me as a white cis hetero male.
Yeah.
And I feel like this cultural humility concept just blew my mind. Like, I'm going to bring it up in argument. Not arguments, conversations.
Yeah. Debates.
But I think that's not to say that there's not additional space for folks to also own their privilege. Yeah. So as we're talking about white folks being able to own their privilege, and you know, we hear the time, well, I didn't own slaves. My parents didn't own slaves.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, dude, we know that. But also being clear, like, you're in a system that benefits and helps you in that privilege. And not just talking about racial privilege, but gender privilege as well.
Well, you know, the conversations like this, one, obviously they're hard to have in hetero like spaces, but they're also harder to have in hetero of color spaces as well. Like, being an African American male, queer male, it was way harder. I think it's still difficult for a person like my mother to understand something like this because she has an idea of what a strong black man is supposed to be, quote unquote.
And that expectation can feel limiting at times,
right?
And that expectation can have that negative impact on our mental health at times. So being able to try to reframe those expectations to have clear, consistent conversations.
Dr. Milo Dodson joins us again as we discuss toxic masculinity and just dynamics to create more safe spaces.
I mean, doing a phenomenal job.
Yes. Oh. Dropping the concepts.
Thanks, y'all.
And I found this really interesting Dame Magazine article from October 2017 titled "Men Are Killing Thousands of Women a Year for Saying No." Very powerful headline there. And it included this statement: "For every mass shooting on the national news, there are countless smaller gun-related murders the media overlooks perpetrated by angry men who can't bear rejection." So is rejection behind it all?
Ooh, that's a question. So that article, in addition to what Ryan was talking about with the Playboy article, shout out to Bruna. If you think about your identity as a man being based off of the oppression of women, and if you then get rejected, somehow you're losing a piece of your identity. Does that make sense? So if my identity as a man feels validated when I can either conquest a woman or I can somehow put a woman down.
It's like a checkmark system, like, oh, I'm winning.
Correct. And then if I'm not winning, then I'm losing. And so if I'm losing, then somehow I need to gain that back. And for a lot of men, there's the idea that, well, I can feel validated when I'm angry, mad, or violent.
So one thing I can't control because I know I have the power in that way.
Exactly. And so I feel like I lost that power when I was turned down. So in Bruna's article, she's talking about sometimes it's not as easy as just saying no, no thank you, because there's a very real fear of losing your life.
Do you also think because it goes back to like some sort of biological thing that men have where it's like just aggression in general or conquering?
Potentially.
Or like way back, going back to, you know.
Those good old Bible days.
I feel like survival of the fittest
like
the caveman in a way.
Yeah, it's evolution, like caveman behavior.
I mean, I think, sure, there may be some underlying biological piece, but I also think it's more the psychosocial biological piece where men, there's a social construct that we're talking about. And to be a man, I need to enact my manhood by showing my domination over women. And when I can't do that, then somehow I'm less than a man. So like, how dare you have a negative impact on my manhood? Let me be violent against you.
Okay, and that's interesting because we were actually having a great conversation yesterday off air where we were talking about traditionalism and like men being traditional and them expecting women to be a certain way and to cook and to do all these things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that quote unquote normal? Because I believe it's 2019. Ain't no woman just about to sit around the house cooking. Like that's not realistic. But I know Sheer brought up some points of saying like, well, I do believe some cis hetero men just like the idea of like, oh, if there's a woman cooking, blah, blah, blah.
I think, they feel, or it reminds, I was saying, reminds them of possibly their mom. And even though they would say, I want you to be independent, I love your passion, the fact that you're career oriented, it would be nice if you would do the, it's like a comfort that they fall back on.
But think about how we're talking about that, right? We're talking about, I want to be comforted, go cook for me.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily having...
I ain't raising no man.
We're not saying... we're not saying that, hey, you're my equal, you're my partner, you're my queen, you're my king. Mm. You're saying, hey, I want to feel like my need is being met, go cook for me. And if there's a discussion about...
What if they're cooking for you too, but then you're like, they're like, come on, I it's nice, it would be nice, I'm turned on by a woman that cooks.
Well, for a lot of folks, that's a very real thing.
Yes.
And
that's what I'm talking about.
We can go to a restaurant where there is a female chef and be like, your food was prepared.
But it's necessary for couples to have that conversation ahead of time. Yeah. To be very clear, saying like, hey, this is what's helpful for me. This is my need. Is this okay for you? And not just to assume like, hey, go make me a sandwich.
Well, yeah, of course. Like that demanding thing. Let's go back to, I guess, what we were talking about in terms of violence, aggression against women. And in this article, it says violence against women is men's problem to solve, not women's.
That's right.
I agree. But in the end, it's a we need to work together. It takes two to tango or no?
Well, if you think about people in positions of power, there's not going to be this easy, oh, you know what? Let me just go ahead and give up this power because like that's the cool thing to do. So when I think I may have said something similar to that, being able to say, hey, I need to have this conversation with other men because men are the ones that are enacting and creating these problems, not women who are surviving them. So similarly, racism ain't black people's fault. As a black man, racism ain't my fault.
Right.
And I also recognize at the same time, while I'm oppressed in terms of my racial identity, I have privilege in terms of my gender identity, which makes it incumbent upon me to have conversations with other men to deconstruct that privilege and to support women.
But the only way that happens is through acknowledgement, and right? Through like acknowledgement, you need to acknowledge.
Through acknowledgement, as well as having those difficult conversations to not feel like you're going to be losing something by... gaining equality, but actually creating more of a space where we can all feel safe at the very, very least, feeling safe.
And also, I guess, feeling like, because I think a lot of times people feel like, oh, what do you want me to apologize for being a man or apologize for doing this? Mm. And I don't think...
Yeah, I've been around those conversations.
And my thing is, it's like, I don't think it needs to be that, but it's just the acknowledgement. Like, all
seeing the other side
into that. Right. Walking, it's kind of like walking a mile in someone else's shoes.
Yeah, and feeling heard, feeling seen, and feeling validated goes a long, long way.
And to ask the last question, do you think that starts at parenting level, like raising children? Because I feel like that is what really shapes what we learn in by our environment.
I think it's parenting as well as school systems, where school systems automatically throw kids into gendered roles.
Yeah.
So we know, you know, from all the research, boys are somehow promoted to go into more of the mathematics, engineering, sciences.
Oh my God, I remember in high school, made me take a weightlifting class. I got out immediately. I felt so uncomfortable. I was like, ew, are these weights? I'm sweating.
I
want to
see you in that outfit though.
Oh, it was the worst.
Dr. Myla Dotson, thanks again for joining us and dropping that knowledge. We are continuing to
Where can I find Dr. Myla?
Okay, yeah, sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, everyone, and I just moved on to Where can they find you?
It's all good. So my personal Twitter as well as Instagram is phdodson, phdodson. And I have a podcast with the Queen of LA herself, Yessi Ortiz. And that podcast is called Mental Health is Real. And real is an acronym for reflecting empathy and love. So we're on Twitter and Instagram as well.
I'm telling you, unicorn. Yes.